So we're doing another crossover and get used to it. This is kind of the par for
Yeah,
the
this is
course
going to
at
be a
this
recurring theme.
point. So bear with me. I am going to be looking at my notes for those of you listeners who are watching. So October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And so we decided that it was really important as to survivors of domestic violence, but also just to women who really care about bringing about awareness to this topic. And Kristen, as a mental health professional who has worked in domestic violence,
Baptized myself by fire on that internship.
this is a time for reflection, education, and action against the menace that has touched the lives of countless individuals across the globe. Domestic violence is not limited to women, which is a common misconception. So this month serves as a poignant reminder of the struggles many face behind closed doors and the collective responsibility that we all share to bring about change. Domestic violence is not limited to bruises and scars. Its imprint lingers in the form of emotional traumas, psychological manipulation, and in ways that often remain unseen by the outside world. Its ripple effect extends to families, communities, and generations. Recognizing its multifaceted nature is vital, and that's why today we will delve deep into the many faces of domestic abuse, from personal anecdotes of physical abuse and its sinister escalation to the convoluted intricacies of psychological and narcissistic abuse. We aim to shed light on aspects that remain hidden in the shadows. So, as I mentioned, I teamed up here with my bestie, Kristen. She is an LPC, and she's going to be offering not just personal insights, but also clinical insights into her perspective on the topic. I guess the one last thing I do want to say is obviously because this is an episode about domestic violence, heavy trigger warning. If this is something that might be triggering to you, I do suggest proceeding with caution or just skipping over this episode.
Or pause and listen with a buddy and get support as you need it.
Yes.
So just kind of some brief statistics and some clinical insight. So 1 in 3 women, 1 in 9 men have reported experiencing domestic violence. And when we look at any of these statistics, it's really important to note that these are only based on what's actually reported. Many people either don't report or they don't recognize that they're even being abused. The amount of times that I've actually had a client come in and they'll say, you know, my partner isn't abusive, but they do this, this, and this. So, and my reaction is like, okay, well, your partner doesn't hit you, but there are far more components to abuse than that. There was a woman named Beverly Gooden who started a hashtag movement that I used pretty liberally when I was working with the domestic violence population, the hashtag Why I Stayed movement. And the one that always stuck with me from the tweets that I saw in the article that I first read on it was really short, really simple, but really, really powerful. It's not one day they hit you, it's every day they work hard to make you feel smaller. And that's what we're talking about when we look at the Duluth model, which was how we started at the domestic violence facility where I worked. Every single first session with somebody, we would be handing them the Duluth model to be like, just, you know, take a look. It's like a little pie chart. Wish I could screen share for the people who are watching. But I'll just explain briefly what it is. So it's since been expanded upon. But it proposed that the principal cause of domestic violence is a social, cultural, and patriarchal ideology that allowed men to control women through power and violence. So Tara mentioned that DV is not a gender-specific thing. So the wheel has since been expanded to be more gender inclusive. So, you know, the physical abuse is the go-to that everybody thinks of when they hear domestic violence, but also coercion and threats falls into that. Intimidation, emotional abuse, so putting you down, humiliating you, playing those mind games, the gaslighting that goes on, which we'll get more into a little bit later. Isolation, so controlling what you do, who you see, to really keep you separate from any form of social support that you might have outside of them. Denying, minimizing, and blaming. So kind of the you're so sensitive, or even making jokes about the abuse, minimizing what they did, not taking your concerns seriously, or just outright gaslighting, saying, like, no, that didn't happen. For people who share children, using the children, triangulating them, either, you know, threatening to keep the children from the other parents, putting the children in the middle, turning them against one parent, saying, well, they don't really love you. So a whole slew of things, economic abuse, preventing them from getting work or controlling all of the finances, and gender privilege. So, and that I guess more is like a heteronormative situation. And then the economic abuse, not specifically noted here, but something that I saw a lot of that's important to mention and that a lot of people might not know, that also kind of bleeds over if we are talking about somebody who is in a marriage for their green card, for example, getting their citizenship and they're waiting, and that may be, you know, part of that hashtag why I stayed for them, right?
Right.
There are several instances of people who have intercepted that paperwork. So the person who's waiting for their citizenship papers thinks they're still waiting, thinks it hasn't happened yet, and their partner is withholding the information so that they can maintain that control.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it said using children too. Another thing that happens that is really important is pets, and not even just fighting over who gets the pet, but like abusing the pet to mess with you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I've seen that. So
yeah, that another one that is sadly really common.
Yeah.
I heard a case of like a woman finding her cat in the freezer, like barely clinging to life.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, one of the cases, not that I personally worked with, but at the agency where I did my internship. I think the cat made it. I think it was happy ending as much as it could be in that situation. So what causes it? Whole bunch of things. Like, you can't really boil it down to just one thing. Yeah. It may be an interaction of situational and individual factors. So nature nurture kind of thing. Yes. These are might learn violent behavior from their family, community, or their culture. Another thing that was just mind-blowing to me when I did my training for my internship, there were no laws even in place about this because it was so the norm, like the wives submitting to the husbands and like all of those old patriarchal mindsets that we started with until the 90s.
That is mind-blowing.
No laws in place for this.
Yeah. I specifically made sure to not look at your updates to the notes so that I could be surprised by this. I am fucking surprised by this. Like,
react in real time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's I mean, I was just born in 87. So like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah. Laws didn't exist until you were like potty trained.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
It really, really was. Like, we were kids. We were babies.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say? I was going to say something else with that just completely went out of my brain. just like fun little trivia thing. Fun. very loose use of that term.
Fun fact.
Fun fact. So if you've heard the phrase rule of thumb, do you know where that comes from?
No.
Okay, so that comes from if, like, olden days, like if a wife was like out of wine, and this is why there were no rules till the 90s, because if she was out of line, the rule of thumb was he could find a switch in the yard, and as long as it was the same thickness as his thumb, he could use that. He could beat her with that. That was totally legal and socially acceptable for a while.
As long as it was no thicker than his thumb?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? That's the rule of thumb?
That's the rule of thumb.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're married to some, like, big, beefy dude and you're, like, my size.
Right, yeah.
Fuck, it's gonna hurt.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that that was allowed in the first, but, like,
yeah. It was a thing that was, like, presumably in writing somewhere, because it was, like, a rule that people abided by. Really wild. I never fact checked actually. But I'm assuming that the people who trained me for my certification knew what they were talking about.
Right.
That's my source. I didn't like peer review it and all that. Then there are all of these other impacts that we think about. It's really, in addition to the isolating that the abuser is doing, it is something that's socially isolating for victims in general. You know, just all of these misconceptions, like we talked about, that, well, it's just physical. He's not hitting me, so he's not really abusing me, or she or they are not hitting me.
I think we can talk about more real life examples. Sorry to
interrupt
there, but I think that as we talk about it, because I know for me, I just kind of have like, okay, I'm going to talk about this experience, and it's just going to kind of come out organically. I think a lot of times that
exactly,
we'll kind of uncover that and delve more into that later on.
And then finally, when we talk about victim blaming, we hear that a lot. Even the, you know, why did you stay? It like counts as victim blaming, really.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you just leave? All that judgment.
Like if I were in that situation, I would have done blah blah blah. And it's like, actually, unless you've been in it, and unless you're in it,
no idea.
You have no idea what you would actually do.
Yeah.
This part of this, which again we'll get more into, is the manipulation part of it, the psychological part of it with the physical abuse.
Yeah. I do just want to mention with the victim blaming piece, where it comes from is a phenomenon called the just world theory. And what that is like, as humans, it kind of breaks our brains a little bit to think about the horrors and atrocities that we can commit and inflict on each other.
Yeah.
And we need to make it make sense. And often how we do that is like, okay, well, if it happens to that person, what's wrong with them? Like, what did they do to deserve it?
Right.
Because we have to find a way for it to make sense in our brain.
Yeah. And it might not even be a conscious thing that we're doing necessarily. We're just
trying. No, not at all.
We're just trying to like make it make sense.
Yeah.
All right. So on that note, we're going to start. We're going to delve right into the different types of abuse and a little bit more about them. So the first one up, of course, we will talk about physical abuse, because that's the one that most people know the most about, hear the most about, the most apparent, I feel like. So domestic violence is not a monolithic experience. It doesn't always manifest as a black eye, though for many it does. So we are going to be pulling back the curtain on the many faces of it and unveiling its often hidden facets. So physical abuse. I have borne the weight of physical abuse. Physical abuse starts insidiously, maybe like a push or a slap or even just a tight grip on your arm. So it can be like, hey, don't leave, come back here, and kind of a yank.
Physically blocking you from leaving a space. Mm.
Yes. Yep. That's another one. So they are often dismissed with apologies and promises of it never happening again. But over time, they can escalate. What was once a push becomes a punch. What was once a momentary outburst often becomes a recurrent nightmare. Every incident leaves an indelible mark, not just on the skin, but on the soul. Wounds aren't always visible. Psychological manipulation is another face of domestic violence. It is equally as damaging, but more elusive. I've been there as well. Trapped in a web of lies where it gets really twisted. Your self-worth is constantly undermined, where every move is calculated to instill doubt, fear, and dependency. It's a slow and draining process where the abuser seeks to gain control over your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Then there is narcissistic abuse, a specific type of emotional abuse perpetrated by those with narcissistic tendencies. Here, the abuser is a master of deception, often portraying themselves as the victim or the misunderstood. They will gaslight you, as Kristen mentioned earlier, making you doubt your memories or perception. It's like you start to really question, am I crazy? Is what I'm saying and experiencing even reality anymore? Like, that's how deep it can get. So they'll shower you with love one moment and then tear you down the next, all while maintaining a facade of perfection to the outside world. There is somebody very specific in mind, and as we delve deeper into these topics, I am going to talk about my personal experiences. I won't be naming any names, but I will be talking about my specific experiences. I mean, I was involved in a relationship with someone. It was textbook narcissistic abuse. The emotional toll for narcissistic abuse is profound because the abuse seeks to erode your identity and your sense of self.
Kind of like, they're not going to just hit you one day. They're working hard every day to make you smaller.
Yeah,
to make you question yourself.
Yeah, totally. At the end of that narcissistic abusive relationship, for me, I felt like a shell of my former self for a little while. I remember calling my ex-husband actually and crying on the phone with him and saying, am I really this bad? And telling him about everything. And like, finally, after ending that relationship, having a conversation for the first time with a person, calling my ex-husband who, you know, we lived together, we were married, we had kids and everything. And do you really think that what this person is saying about me is true? Because that's how much he got into my head.
Mm-hmm. The other thing too, I don't think I mentioned before, and we can skip over it if I have it elsewhere in the notes, because I might. The justifications, like the mental gymnastics we will do ourselves, like this self-gaslighting and invalidating our own emotions to, again, that just world theory, like trying to make it make sense in our brain. Like, okay, well, maybe I could have said that better, or...
That's how it starts.
Maybe that was a little bit fucked up of me. Like, maybe they do have a point.
Mm-hmm. That's how it started for me, for sure. So each of these forms of domestic violence, while distinct, share a common thread. They rob the victim of their agency, self-worth, and their sense of safety. It's a complex, multifaceted issue that many silently endure. And so today is our time to give it a voice.
There are some underlying psychological mechanisms that drive these abusive behaviors. There's a heavy correlation between lower education levels, experiencing childhood abuse, somebody who is a drug or alcohol abuser, children who are victims of or end up witnessing domestic and family violence during their formative years because they're learning that violence is an appropriate way to resolve a conflict.
Right.
Like, our parents are our earliest role models. So if that's how we see them resolving things, that's how we learn to operate in the world. Culture beliefs, I think I touched on this before, that men have the right to control their partners. Children who witness domestic violence are more likely to either, if they don't become abusers themselves, be victimized by their spouses. Again, it's normalized. They've seen it their whole life.
Yep.
And it's about power and control. Like, that's why the Duluth model is the power and control wheel. Abusers feel the need. Reasons they feel the need to control may include anger management issues, jealousy, low self-esteem or feeling inferior, mental health issues, or if they have a personality disorder diagnosis. So we see it a lot in borderline personality in particular. I remember too with the, you know, am I crazy? With my own experience, I was definitely that girl of like, well, my partner doesn't hit me, but they do X, Y, and Z. And the most escalated to physical was kind of a rough grab on my arm, yanking me off a bar stool, like, we're going.
Mm-hmm.
One night. But that person had borderline personality disorder. And when I went into my Psych 101 class, like very first semester of grad school, and looked at the diagnostic criteria. No, it was first semester of undergrad, actually. So just general psych overview of everything. Looked at the diagnostic criteria for borderline personality disorder and was like, oh my God, I'm not crazy. Like, somebody just gave me a checklist and here is my experience explained.
Yeah.
Like, it was so validating.
I mean, that's how it was for me with the narcissistic abuse. I didn't know that that was even a thing until after I got out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And started to just kind of see, I mean, thanks to social media, start to see these little things pop up, like about relationships and abuse and whatever. And I started to be like, huh, that seems a whole lot like what I experienced.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit unnervingly familiar.
And now when I see all of these things, I'm like, it was textbook. And, you know, I'd like to think, you know, as an adult, as a woman in my mid-30s, that I would know better and be able to spot that shit. But no, I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, and also, it's not on you to know better. It's on them to not be abusive.
Right. Yes, exactly. Like, that, very much that. All right. So we're back after a little break. Change of scenery for me. We are going to delve deeper into each type of abuse. And so we are going to start out with physical abuse. I have a headline here of it being the escalating cycle, because it does not ever just start out, or I would say very rarely starts out as just full on like kicking, punching, hitting. It's more,
because then who would stay?
Right, exactly. So it's more of like a slow burn. And so it's those things that we mentioned earlier, where it is the grabbing or pushing or things like that. So for me, I was much younger. I was 18 years old. I got into a relationship with someone who, I mean, we could psychoanalyze me for days on how I wound up in this situation. He was somebody who seemed very sweet and innocent and harmless and loving. And then
things to say about that, sure.
And then at some point, it was like, I mean, I was 18, I was desperate to get out of my living situation at home, and he convinced me that he had a better place for us. And so we moved to another state together, just kind of hopped in the car. He was like, we're gonna go stay with my mom. And we hopped in my car and drove to Pennsylvania. Turns out that his mom had no idea that we were coming.
Oh my God.
So we show up at this woman's house. She's like, what the hell? I don't have room for you guys. Yeah, that was how it started.
I did not know all this detail, so I'm going to be doing some real
time. No, that's fine. That's why I was like, maybe I don't want to tell her too much about this because it's like,
Yeah, like you, I actually don't know a ton about this particular chapter of your life other than just like the bare bones facts. So
yeah.
I'm reacting fresh too.
Most people don't know very much because I've never really talked too much about it. But
Yeah. Not like stuff
so
you want to dredge up over
right, yeah.
conversation.
So it's been so long now that I am able to talk about it a lot more easily, but it is still very heavy. So bear with me while I try and like collect myself a little bit and make sure that I have everything in order the best that I can. I mean, there were a lot of red flags that I ignored. This person wasn't working and was kind of like couch surfing and stuff. And we wound up arriving there and she's like, oh, I don't have a place for you. And it was kind of like, shit, okay, now what? And so we crashed on her couch for a little bit. And I got a job. He didn't get a job. I wound up finding a hotel for us to stay in. So we were staying in one of those like motels that you rent for like weekly or whatever.
Okay.
And that's when, he had already gotten me away from all of my friends and family, right? By moving me out of the state. And that is when things escalated. So it escalated to not just him like being controlling about what I was doing or who I was talking to, but even where like who I was working with and who I was working around. If there was a man that I was working with, that wasn't okay, and that was always an argument. And then it became like what I was and wasn't allowed to wear to work. I have always been curvy. I mean, from the time I hit puberty, I had boobs and hips and a butt, and so anything on my body would look very different from something like if you and I were to wear the same thing, it would look a lot more revealing on me, probably because of my, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I gave you that top, like here,
Yeah,
I fill this out, but it'll look awesome on you and it's super soft to have it.
it's awesome and I love it.
Yeah.
But
Well, also with the work thing, I realized like I experienced that too, and the way it looked. So my first abuser that I alluded to before was actually a woman. So I'm bisexual, pansexual, I kind of use them interchangeably,
Yes,
honestly.
ma'am.
And she was a lesbian and a little bit insecure dating somebody bi or pan, like on that part of the LGBTQ plus spectrum.
Okay.
And so with the controlling with who I talked to with work specifically, like I'd come home from work and like, oh, we got a new barista today. I was working at Starbucks at the time. We got a new barista. I was training her. She seems really cool. And my ex's response was like, well, is she gay? I'm like, I don't know. I was teaching her how to make lattes. I didn't ask. Like, it didn't come up because any gay woman or straight man who entered my orbit, automatically I was going to cheat with them in her
Ah,
mind,
okay.
or they were going to be a threat to her
Like
in
they
some
were
way.
threat. Yeah, that's very interesting. So yeah, it was very similar for me in just that anybody was a threat because if I had friends that were outside of who I hung out with him, then other people could point out all the bad things that were happening. And so it started out as just the control of like who I was with, what I was doing, what I was wearing, and then got into arguments that started with like started escalating to pushing and shoving and then throwing things and then breaking holes in the walls and then full blown like actually hitting. And so not to get into all the nitty gritty details, because I don't think that that's necessary, but it was over the course, thankfully, it was not super long in that, I think I left home. It was probably just a few months of that chaos before, or actually it might have been like a whole year.
Well, and how next level isolation was what he did too. Like he separates you from your friends and your
Yeah.
family, and puts you in a completely different state where you know no one and you're effectively homeless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so eventually we did get an apartment, and that, so yeah, it was a while. God, it's been so long. I haven't even thought about like the timeline of things. I remember at one point my friends from home actually came to visit me, and it wasn't until years later that they actually told me this, but they didn't really know what was going on. They just had a bad feeling, right? They were so afraid of sleeping. When they stayed over, because they were so upset by the situation that I was in. And they actually like talked about like, if Tara doesn't get out of this, she's going to die here.
Wow.
And again, like, I didn't know that they even thought that until years later. I didn't realize that they were seeing what I was experiencing, even though they didn't necessarily see it. Right.
Yeah. Did you ask them why they didn't say something sooner?
It was a while ago. Honestly, I don't remember. I think that they were just so afraid, and they didn't and they didn't know what to do. And we were so young. We were 18.
Because I had a similar experience with my sister, actually. It was like, you know, it ended and she's like, yeah, I never really liked her. And I asked why she hadn't said anything, because I would have valued her opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And her response was basically like, you know, I could tell you were already like really into her and really invested in this relationship. So I wasn't going to, you know, I'm sure there's a study somewhere with, you know, loved ones or survivors and those dynamics.
Yeah, for sure.
Look at.
Yeah. So to make a very long story short, it escalated. And eventually it got to the point where my friends that I worked with, because they were the only people that I could talk to
outside of him
without it being a big, big deal, they tried to like get me out. Like, they showed up at my apartment and were like, you gotta go. And I was like, I can't go, because then I had a dog. He had a cat who had kittens, and that. So I was kind of like, I felt obligated to them. And at some point, I don't remember exactly what happened, but it just got so bad that I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. I remember his mom being away, and I called her. She lived pretty close by. And I was like, hey, can I just crash at your house for the night while I figure out what the hell I'm doing? Like, I'm afraid of being here with him, because he had like trashed the apartment and flipped out. She was like, yeah, just don't tell him that you're at my house. I was like, obviously I'm not going to, like, I'm trying to get away from this motherfucker.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, because he had isolated me so much, the first place he went was to her house. And he climbed in through the window. What basically ensued was a hostage situation where he held a knife. He was stabbing himself in the sternum, which, you know, any of us who can feel our sternum as I'm doing it knows that it is very hard. And so it was like superficial stabbing, but it was still very scary.
Oh,
and in the moment I was just fucking mortified and didn't recognize that that's what was happening. I just was like, oh my God, stop hurting yourself.
Yeah. Well, and you're so young in this story too, like maybe 19 max at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like maybe almost, about 19. I think I had just turned 19. So just fucking mortified, like, please stop hurting yourself. I'll do whatever you want. Just please stop hurting yourself. So I kind of negotiated with him and was like, I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to leave. I promise I'm not going to leave. Just please don't hurt me and don't hurt you. And like, because it felt like, okay, in this situation, if I try anything other than to get him to stop doing what he's doing by like telling him everything's going to be okay, he's going to kill us both.
Yeah.
So I remember him, and it's so weird that like I can't remember like all the details, because I mean, number one, it was so long ago, but also it was fucking terrifying, and I was just trying to survive those moments.
Yeah. And your brain blocks that out as a defense mechanism for itself.
Moving forward
and going about your day-to-day.
Right, exactly. So I remember it ending with him like with his head in my lap, and crying, and me just like stroking his hair and like, it's gonna be okay. Everything's gonna be okay. We're gonna be okay. And like the whole time just thinking, oh my God, what the fuck am I gonna do? How the fuck am I gonna get out of here? Eventually, like he fell into such a deep sleep that I was able to sneak away and I got in my car and I lived in my car for a few months. I got a restraining order. I remember when he showed up for court for that restraining order, he was basically like, I never did this. This never happened. She's lying. Mm-hmm. And so thankfully the judge said, okay, well then it'll be no problem for you to stay the fuck away from her. Like, nice. I mean, I just remember the snark from the judge was like very satisfying.
I love that because not everybody unfortunately gets that version of events.
I was very, very lucky that I was like, I just want him to leave me alone. Because they were like, do you want to press charges? Do you want to do this? Do you want to? I was like, I just want him to stay away from me.
Yeah.
I just want him to stay away from me.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So, you know, thankfully the judge listened and believed me. I know that I am very lucky in that situation that's how that turned out. Thankfully he did not have like any resources really because he was a homeless loser, and I am perfectly okay saying that because of who he was and what he did. And I, you know,
yeah, you get a pass on that one.
I will die yeah. I will die on that hill. He tried to fucking kill me. So yeah, I lived in my car for a little bit because at the time, like to give a little bit of context, I had already left a home situation that I didn't want to be in. And so for why did I stay? Well, I had just run away from home. Mm-hmm. I ran away from home already. And so my choice was to run back to one bad situation or figure out this situation. And I had already gotten out of that situation that I had been trying to get out of for my entire life, right?
Yeah.
So I chose to stay in that one until I had had enough. And thankfully I survived it and I got out of that. But actually that is it's a segue, that relationship, into our next topic of mental and emotional abuse. But before mm-hmm. I jump to that, do you have anything else on physical abuse?
So physical abuse, the only thing that I would add, I think you covered it really well with that example. But you did say, or you mentioned earlier, how textbook it is. And really, just the similarities, the overlaps, regardless of how the abusive relationship plays out. Mm-hmm. Like, abuse is honestly so textbook, it's boring.
Yeah.
Like, as like kind of fucked up as that might sound to say. And just that image that you described of him with his head in your lap, crying, then, you know, you're the one who's been harmed and you're now doing the emotional labor of comforting him and reassuring him. That is super common too. Like, I had that as well with my abusive relationship. And it was more because it was more of that like verbal, mental, emotional that I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'd get told what a piece of shit I was, completely broken down. And like, yeah, I can't, like, you suck so much, I can't do this anymore.
I was always cheating and stuff like that.
Oh, I was always cheating. Yeah. I was always cheating.
Meanwhile, I was fucking scared to talk to anybody or even tell people what was really going on in my life.
I had my friends saved under, because even, yeah, certain friends were not okay.
Well, yeah, they're a threat once they want to protect you.
Yeah. So I had the friends that she didn't like were saved in my phone as second phone numbers for the approved ones just to keep peace. And she wouldn't ever see a name come up on my phone that felt like a threat to her.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
It was,
yep,
the it was a lot. But she would break up with me, you know, what seemed like alternate Tuesdays, like after having one of these outbursts and going off on me. And every time it happened, I felt this weight lift off my shoulders and this like very brief blink and you'll miss it kind of moment of relief before she would then just completely change, like just crumple like curl up in the fetal position and just sob.
I'm sorry. I'll never do it again.
And then, oh no. No, because I was in the wrong. I was the fucked up one. And now she's broken and she's crying because, like, I'm the worst. And I'm not fighting her saying, like, fuck you, you're awful, I'm done with you.
Mm.
So then it turned into me taking on that caregiver role and staying.
Moving on. After we take a breath.
Yeah. That was a lot.
To psychological abuse and manipulation, which we did just talk a little bit about in both of our situations. So now.
And your segue from the physical to the psychological.
So I wound up leaving one abusive situation and like literally into the arms of another abusive situation. And so in this situation, I do want to be really careful what I say, mainly because of other people who are affected by this. And so I'm going to be like a little bit more cautious, but in a nutshell, it was all a lie. And so this person came in as this handsome, charming person. And I guess in retrospect now, like knowing what love bombing is, I was being love bombed a little bit. Like I was friggin' 19 years old and just coming out of one of the most traumatic experiences of my entire life. So I'm not really sure. I was homeless. I was living in my car and this guy came along and was very sweet to me and wanted to spend time with me and seemed like he wanted to take care of me. And he was much older than me. He said that he was, I think he was like 9 or 10 years older than me. You know, it seemed like a really nice situation for me to be in as opposed to the awful, abusive, controlling situation that I had just gotten out of. In this situation, this one is, to make a very long story short, I found out, I would say, we moved in together very quickly. I would say it was like we started seeing each other. It was like December. I mean, we were basically living together after like maybe a month, maybe a couple of weeks at one of his friend's house by March. I mean, I guess there's really no way for me to sugarcoat some of this and protect some of this stuff. I was pregnant. March, I was pregnant, maybe April, whatever. Point being, by May, we started telling people I was pregnant. Slowly, things started to come out about like he had a drug problem and he was disappearing a lot. And I had the worst morning sickness. I was constantly puking and miserable. And I just remember feeling alone very often because I was being lied to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then also picking up on inconsistencies in what his stories were and then being made to be crazy or I'm wrong or I don't know what I'm talking about or whatever.
That never happened.
And And so it turns out that it was so probably September. I finally found out that a lot of the things that I had been concerned about were true. This person had lied to me about their age. So they were 14 years older than me rather than 9 years older than me. They were, so, you know, here I am, I'm 19 years old. This person was 34, 35 years old. So I just turned 36. I can't fucking imagine
going after a 19-year-old.
Like, mm-hmm. Not just the fact that my own child is 15, almost 16, but just like the level of maturity, you see as an adult, right? Most normal adults see an 18, 19-year-old as an actual child because that's what they are. They are still, yes, they are legally adults. But they are still babies.
Yeah.
And like
25 before like that spot finishes forming, that the soft spot, I always forget the name. Fontanel?
Yeah, whatever it is.
But yeah. Like before that, like your skull is not even fully formed. Like right.
your what is it? Your frontal lobe, your frontal cortex or
cortex.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's your frontal cortex.
I'm a social scientist.
I'm like, oh my god. It's, but yeah, your brain's not even fully fucking developed. Okay. So like No, you are a child. I was a child. I was
You were prey for a predator, honestly, because it's about this power and control the way you were describing it. Like, you know, you're in this position, you're very vulnerable. He's offering you this out of like somebody who can take care of you when you're feeling lost. Like, that's literally how cult leaders operate and
He wanted me to be able to stay home and be a mom and be a housewife and all the things. And here I was, a fucked up 19-year-old who had just, you know, run away from home and then run away from a psycho. It was perfect. It was like the perfect storm. And that was a 3.5 years long situation of me with this person constantly pulling me in and me feeling like I'm going to get away and I'm finally going to get out of this, and then pulling me in and the crying and the I'm so sorry, I love you, I'm going to be better, I'm going to do better. And like, this person is an addict. And so I do have sympathy for people who struggle with addiction, because I feel like the one thing that I have been able to learn is that a person is not their addiction, right? And so their addiction is like this monster
that takes over them.
That is not who they actually are. I mean, I'm not going to psychoanalyze him or whatever, but like, I know a lot of the fucked up things that he did were because of his addiction. But I also know that a lot of it was just predatory behavior.
Yeah.
And I say this now as a woman who has done all the work and who has been able to look back and say, you know, like, a lot of things can be true that don't seem like they can be true at the same time. And I think in his own fucked up way, he does really love and care about me, even still to this day. I think that that he is sick in probably more ways than I even know, and maybe even more ways than he knows. But what he did was he lied and manipulated and cheated. And eventually it did, after a couple of years of all of that psychological manipulation of like, no, this is not true, this is not happening, you're wrong, you're crazy, you're this, you're that, I'm leaving, no, you're, no, please don't leave me, I can't be without you, I don't know how to live without you. Eventually it did start getting physical. I think that part of it was my rage. I got to the point where I had so much built up rage and,
kept powerless for that long. We'll do that. Yeah. Too.
Yeah. And I know that there was a time where I remember screaming, and I mean, this person is almost an entire foot taller than me and much more built than I am and much more strong than I am. And I do remember standing and screaming at him, like, I hate you. I hate you. And punching him in his chest and just screaming, I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. Because I had felt so mind fucked. And I didn't even know what was real anymore. Anytime that I spoke with him, it was like, I didn't know what was true anymore. So that was, I think, once it started to turn physical, was the rapid decline, thankfully. So I think there were a couple of other, like, I was physically violent in that situation, absolutely. And however, I snapped. And then then there was a lot of like that yanking, pushing, pulling. And then there was a time where he hit me, just straight up whacked me. Because I don't even remember what it was. I don't remember if it was like I was being accused of cheating, because that started to become a thing. And it had just gotten to the point where, and again, I'm leaving out a lot because obviously this is the father of my child, and I want to protect him as much as my son as much as possible and not hurt him too much by knowing all the things that happened. But this is my part of the story, and I feel like I should be sharing some of this.
Yeah. Also, if you're looking at that side by side with the first situation, this was something I saw a lot too, working with the domestic violence population. I worked in non-residential, so I would see women at various stages of leaving the abuser. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, often, like you're describing, there's this series of relationships. Like, it's not necessarily just one person. and what happens. We talked a little bit before about the justification and like the mental gymnastics we do to kind of like make it okay in our brains.
Yeah.
And I literally had one of my clients say to me, like, yeah, you know, I know what my current boyfriend does isn't okay, but at least he didn't try to kill me and put me in the hospital like the last one. Like, you know, I'm just smoking the heroin. I'm not shooting it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For me, there was a lot of justifying. There was not just, you know, the at least he's not hitting me, but there was also like, I have a baby with this person now.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from such a troubled home as a kid, I could not, as a child myself, because I was a child,
mm-hmm.
wrap my head around not giving my son a family, like mm-hmm. a family unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I so desperately wanted to believe that somehow he would change and that he would do better.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got to see this person be so loving to his son,
mm-hmm.
the way that he loves, because I do really believe he really loves our son. And I think that we can talk a little bit more about that. But the best thing that he's done, I'll say this, is to stay away. And he has done that because he knows that the best thing for him is to stay away.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in itself, believe it or not, I think an act of love.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cry. Sorry. I just, I didn't realize that I was going to actually cry during this. So I really, oh my gosh. Okay.
You good, babe?
Yeah. I really wanted to believe that I wasn't making a mistake,
mm-hmm.
and that I hadn't brought another human being into the world to suffer.
Yeah.
It took, thankfully, I think it was that hitting me moment to realize, and because he did it in front of our son, my son, that was when I was like, okay, I can't do this. I can't let my son see this. I can't let my son have this life. This is not the life that I want for him.
Yeah.
So it took like a little bit. It took a couple more weeks to a month. I did a lot of like reaching out to figure out where the hell I was going to go, what I was going to do. By that point, I had moved from one state back home, at least. So I was close to my family. And even though I couldn't live with my family, I still had their support.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did ultimately get in touch with a women's shelter. I moved into a women's shelter, and that was kind of like the transition into the rest of my life, getting out of that cycle of abuse.
Yeah.
So it was a very long time before I wound up in another abusive situation, which we can touch on after.
Yeah. So I think we have a nice little segue with my next little portion of the notes here.
Yes.
So common tactics used by abusers, particularly with the psychological abuse. And I have had a couple of these experiences with some of my relationships. And probably some of them are going to sound familiar to you too. So use of subtle hostility to manipulate you. So these passive aggressive veiled insults, talk pretty frequently to about, there's this kind of cultural, like, ball busting is my love language sort of mentality that happens. And I engaged in that behavior too for a while. And until, you know, I had a little wake up call with it and was just like, yeah, why is that a go-to? Because it's way too easy for it to veer into active cruelty.
Mm, yeah.
Like, why aren't we just from the gate trying to cultivate kindness?
Yeah.
In our relationship dynamics with the people that we say we love.
Yeah.
So, but like these passive aggressive veiled insults, and often like oh, that can segue into the gaslighting too. Like, oh, it was just a joke. Why are you so sensitive about everything?
Yeah.
Taking credit for your accomplishments, grudge holding behaviors, getting you involved in these circular arguments that just, you never find a resolution. But deflecting the like, well, you know, you did this, you did that. I had an ex.
What about my feelings?
Yeah, right. Like, I called out. And this is one I still struggle to label as abusive, really. But I called out a behavior of his that I didn't like. And he brought up that he paid for more. Like, you give me this much money towards the bill. It's like, well, I can't do math. If you need more, I'm good for it. Just say something. So then we're like walking around town, like looking for a place to eat lunch. And I'm like, nope, sorry. Like, this place is too rich for my blood. I don't have that much money right now. I guess we're doing Chinese until finally he got so sick of it that he actually apologized. Like, I'm sorry, I'll buy you lunch. But yeah. And this was like the keeping score, right? It lends itself well to those deflections in the circular arguments.
Yeah.
These people often are driven by extreme feelings of shame, insecurity, and hypersensitivity to rejection and criticism themselves, but they also lack empathy for others. Like, they're too wrapped up in their own victimhood to even register that somebody else has a point of view, let alone consider it, right? They might appear very shy, introverted, and emotionally vulnerable on the surface, and that makes them dangerously disarming. You know, they, people gravitate towards them, people want to help them, people want to protect them. People who fall for them might, you know, look at that kind of like dark broodiness as something attractive. Like, I want to be the one to make them happy. And the other thing they have going for them, which makes them so dangerous, is a high level of emotional intelligence. Even though they're not registering somebody else's feelings and perspective, they have this high level of emotional intelligence to manipulate, which allows them to earn trust and connection both with their targets and then with outside people. So it's very hard to even get yourself a third party ally because, like, oh, they're, this person's so great. Like, like, they're so nice. They're so whatever. Like, they're charming. They're funny. They're this, they're that. They're Mr. and Ms. Life of the Party. And they're an absolute monster to you behind closed doors.
Well, on that note.
Anything you wanted to add there, or should we delve right into narcissistic abuse, which is kind of what I was leading up to?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that might actually be like a good, because one thing I guess that we can kind of talk about, which is already a little bit of a theme here, is like that these overlap, right? There is, there is overlap, there can be overlap. And so like in my first relationship, I would say that it was like very psychologically abusive, but for a much shorter period of time, and then very quickly turned into physical abuse. Whereas the second one that I was talking about was much, much longer game of psychological abuse and manipulation. And I think that it was circumstantial that it became physical. I think that that you know, part of it was just that I was like, fuck this, I can't do it anymore. And then he was like, no, fuck you, you can't do that.
And I'll control you with force then.
Yeah, that's just a, you know, an example. With the psychological abuse and manipulation, that definitely is more general. Whereas narcissistic abuse, which is the next thing that we're going to talk about, and this is something that you and I spoke about offline, is that it is such a mind fuck. I mean, it all is. I don't want to diminish anybody's experience because it's all fucked up. I will say with narcissistic abuse, it's so much more subtle and nuanced that that's, I think, what makes it such a mind fuck, because it's so much easier, I feel like, to rationalize in a lot of ways, right? Like where you can almost, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, gaslight yourself, because it is often carried out covertly. It leaves victims very confused and invalidated and doubting their own experiences. At its core, it's driven by the narcissist's need for power, admiration, and control at the expense of their partner's well-being. They are basically kind of like feeding off of your pain in a way, right? Gaslighting, which we hear, I feel like that's like one of those what are they, like pop therapy words, right?
Okay, so I'll get on this soapbox now. So, if you were to believe the internet, every single person on the internet is an empath and their ex is a narcissist.
It's true, come on.
And like what you said before too, I always, when I get on this particular soapbox, disclaimer it with, not to invalidate anybody's experience, because it's not about invalidating anybody's lived experience. But the number of people who actually meet the full criteria, the full diagnostic criteria for narcissistic personality disorder is something like 0.05% of the population. Narcissistic traits are a lot more prevalent, but only 0.05% of the population meets full criteria for like this person's a narcissist.
Narcissistic
So
personality disorder, yeah.
yeah, so the amount of people, well, it's like so I'm into things. The amount of people who like say like, oh, my ex was a narcissist. I mean, maybe they had some narcissistic traits. Maybe they were borderline because a lot of borderlines exhibit these narcissistic traits.
Borderline
Sometimes you
personality
will
disorder.
see, yeah, sometimes you will see the disorders being comorbid. So part of that 0.05% may also have borderline personality disorder
Okay.
in addition to meeting the full diagnostic criteria for the
Okay.
narcissistic personality.
Yeah.
And then what we were just talking about with all of those emotional manipulation tactics and the people who appear, they're very charming or they appear very emotional and vulnerable in some way, and we want to like help them and make them happy and protect them. And that's how they're able to draw us and those around us in to their little web. So that would be, there are two types of narcissism. There's grandiose narcissism, which is overt, like somebody who's what we traditionally think of when we think of narcissists, like somebody who's like very full of themselves.
I've got an example.
But there's also the covert or vulnerable narcissist, which would be that second profile, and they're a lot harder to spot. So they're gonna be presenting like more shy, more vulnerable. They seem very innocent, like such a nice guy, such a nice girl. Like they would never.
Oh yeah, they're
They're
so
so
sweet.
sweet.
Yeah, I do want to just add about the, I think that we all at times exhibit some narcissistic behaviors, right? So let's be real. Everybody can at some point behave like do something that comes off as narcissistic. That's just kind of like, I mean, we're human beings with self-preservation, all those kinds of things, right? It's not our fucking place to diagnose people, unless, of course, you, Kristen, it is actually your job. But most of us.
Very cautious with this particular diagnosis because this and gaslighting get so bandied about. Oh yeah,
Yes.
gaslighting. So gaslighting is not just lying. I think we talked about this.
Yeah.
I just saw this, like, I should have looked up who it was, but I saw it explained really brilliantly recently on a little snippet of an interview with Jada promoting her new book. And like, here's the difference between here's the difference between just like I'm on a first name basis, like I hang out with her.
Oh,
Just Jada,
Jada.
yeah.
Oh, girl.
So the way that they were explaining it was, so if I'm lying and I say like, oh, you didn't tell me you went to that party, or if like you're lying to me and I try to call you out on the lie, mm-hmm. and you're just lying, and you say like, oh, you didn't tell me you went to that party. It's like, oh no, I didn't go to that party. It's like, but here's a picture of you at that party. What do you mean? If you're lying, you'll, at that point when you're called out and confronted with the evidence, cop to it. Okay, yeah, I was at that party. I, you know, just didn't want you to feel bad that you weren't invited.
Right.
If you're gaslighting, like, wow. So now we're keeping tabs on where I am, what I'm doing, like, you're crazy. That's just extra. That's so over the top. And then it becomes about the other person.
Right.
Not about the obvious lie that you're just being confronted with and shown evidence of.
Yep.
Like, no, we're not worried about that evidence. Like, you're fucking crazy. What are you talking
No,
about?
You're crazy.
Why are you keeping tabs?
Yeah. So that is a very important distinction, because I feel like being gaslit is something that people don't really understand what gaslighting actually is for the most part. And I think that it is really important to actually talk about like what it is. Mm-hmm. So it is where the abuser is making you question your own reality, like, or your perception of things, even like it's not just saying that didn't happen. But it's saying like, you're so crazy for thinking that that happened.
Yeah.
So it's not as simple as that didn't happen. It is, what's wrong with you? Like, how could you possibly say that? And or saying like, I am feeling hurt by XYZ. And like, well, that's ridiculous. You're being too sensitive. Mm-hmm. And like that kind of thing over time really starts to chip away at your own belief systems and your own sense of sanity and reality, because actually that's something that I experienced in this other relationship that I had just spoken about, like where I was almost like, wait, what is real?
Yeah.
Am I just imagining this? Am I being paranoid? So love bombing. Love bombing is something that I did not know anything about. And love bombing is something that I learned about, like I said, after this narcissistic abusive relationship, where in the beginning of the relationship, they are like this dream person. They shower you with affection and gifts and compliments and promises of like this perfect life, right?
And how wonderful you are too. Like,
oh,
they
yes.
put you.
Oh, you're so perfect.
So this is actually, I mentioned borderline personality as a common diagnosis for people who are abusive.
Yeah.
My abuser was borderline. The first hallmark in the diagnostic criteria for borderline personality is a pattern of idealization and devaluation. Which I was described as like, one minute I'm on a pedestal, I'm the greatest person in the world. The next minute I am the scum of the earth and I have no idea what the fuck I did wrong. And yep. they're not going to tell me because I should just know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So with love bombing, it's usually like an extreme honeymoon phase, I think, is the best way mm-hmm. to like kind of sum it up. Where
and also a disproportionate one for
oh yes
how much they are putting on you for how wonderful you are. And the degree to which they actually even know a single thing about you because the situation is so.
So I'm going to, I have an example. And so this is my, thankfully, I would say my last really abusive, like extremely overtly abusive relationship, where this person seemed to be everything that I was looking for. He was very handsome. And very successful and like self-made. And he wanted to know everything about me. And he wanted to have a life together. And he wanted to travel together. And so within like a month and a half of meeting him, he took me on a vacation. And it was a vacation that I had expressed to him that I had wanted to go on. And why it meant so much to me. And so I wanted to go to Puerto Rico. I'm Puerto Rican. And I felt like I wanted to really reconnect with my roots and blah, blah, blah. So he picked up on that somehow very early on in our conversations. And it must have been because it wasn't a big conversation that we had, because we had just met and we're just kind of getting to know each other. But it was enough for him to know, I'm going to take her on a vacation and that's how I'm going to get her.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was doing pretty well for himself, he could afford it. And he took me on that vacation. And it was like the best time ever. We had so much fun. He was so sweet. He was so funny. Then in the car, on the way home, like in the Uber after the airport, was when the devaluation started. And it was all of a sudden, I think we were just talking about like what Puerto Rico looked like after all the hurricanes and stuff, right? And how I felt like it was such a shame that things were the way that they are. And like then kind of talked about how they're a territory of the United States and how it's, you know, they're not treated like the United States. And it kind of got into this whole big thing because that's what I do. I like to talk about things like that, right? I like to talk about what's happening in the world and not have such a small view of the world. I wanted to, you know, have an intelligent conversation. Well, unfortunately, he is way smarter than me. And so I didn't know what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I was making a very big deal out of something that I know nothing about because he had traveled all over the place and had seen all these other places that were way worse. And I don't know anything and I'm stupid. And like, he didn't actually say I am stupid, but he did say, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so it all of a sudden became like, I'm passionate about this because I'm Puerto Rican and that's my culture and those are my people, right? So I care about that island more than maybe most places that I might be talking about. Maybe if we were talking about Alabama, yeah, of course I would care. But like, I'm not from Alabama. My family's not from Alabama. Yes, it still matters. But emotionally, I don't have that same attachment to it.
Right.
And he picked up on that and went in for the kill. And so I ended up crying. And somehow, me caring so much about the island of Puerto Rico and the people of Puerto Rico turned into me being too emotional. Basically, I'm so sorry. I can't believe that I made such a big deal out of this. Mm-hmm. Please forgive me. Like, somehow it had twisted, right?
And
so that was the beginning of I would say like a 5 or 6 month long relationship where there was a lot of that happening. I don't need to get into every single, you know, situation, but it started out that way. And so it was always like, I love you so much, you're so amazing, you're so beautiful, you're so smart, you're so this, you're so that. And then, but you're too emotional. Why does this matter so much to you? You don't know anything about that. I know about that. You don't know about that.
Yeah.
Like asking for my opinion, but then when I would give my opinion, it was wrong.
Right.
So it was like this, it was this fucking roller coaster where it was like I was constantly chasing that initial high of, wow, this is so awesome. And I'm so happy. And like, I found somebody who is just as driven as I am. And just as, you know, like he was a dad and he was all these things, but it got to the point and it's hard to really articulate because it's all psychological,
mm-hmm.
where I felt like I didn't even know who I was anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that's really the point because that's the tool that they use, I think, probably most often. To break you down, to make you question yourself, to make you second guess what you know. I had like a smaller scale version of that where just if something was new information to me, instead of, you know, actually just sharing it, like I think most of us will do. I had a partner whose response would be like, oh my God, how do you not know that? Do you know who knows that? Fucking everybody. So I feel this big. And then like, I still to this day, you know, like years out of the relationship, I'll be like, I'll second guess. I'm like, so what's that word for that? What's this thing called? I think it's this, but I'm not sure. And 9 times out of 10.
I'm not going to say it. Yeah. And so then you're not going to say it and you're going to fact check yourself, or you're going to say it and you're going to be like, and you're actually going to preface it with, I'm not sure, even though you kind of are, but you're so used to being told that you're not smart
Yeah.
that you are still having a hard time believing it.
Yeah, like
Yeah.
they make it hard for you to like own my worth. What's that?
Yeah, no, you're nothing without them. So, that's a really big one. The so stonewalling, where there's this punishment period of like, okay, so after I had that argument, right? He didn't talk to me for a few days or something. It would be something like that, or like, well, he would actually tell me, I need you to earn my affection back. And don't get me wrong, there's a difference between needing a cooling off period and an adjustment period, because in any healthy relationship, there can be times when, you have a disagreement and you're like, we're okay, we talked it out, we're good. I just need to kind of like decompress a little bit and allow myself to kind of catch up, right? There's totally a difference between that and actually like having to prove your love for that person over and over, and like love and devotion, because it is really like somehow they convince you that you need their approval and you have to give your devotion. Like, I wish that I could, again, I wish that I could articulate what it is like and how exactly it happens, but it's just so,
Yeah, sometimes you have to be there, but hopefully you never are.
yeah, like it's so nuanced, but like other people can pick up on it. I
I
feel like,
think too, sorry to cut you off,
you're good.
like smaller scale stonewalling too can just look like, something goes down, we're feeling unsettled, we're feeling uneasy about it, and our partner just outright refuses to discuss it. Like, no, that happened. Why do you keep bringing up the past?
Oh yeah, no, we're not talking about this. That conversation is over.
Yeah, like we squashed that already, it's done. It's like, but no, we didn't because I'm still not okay.
Well, on that note, here we go. The challenge with recognizing narcissistic abuse lies in its subtlety. Victims often feel something is amiss but can't quite put their finger on it, and I can absolutely relate to that. As a matter of fact, I reached out to this person's ex-girlfriend because I felt, and yes, that's apparently a thing I do. Hey, ex-girlfriend, I'm not talking about this one. I reached out to her because I felt like I was fucking crazy, and I felt like I know that something's wrong, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is. And so when I reached out to her, she was an absolute angel. She is still to this day, somebody that I am in touch with, and somebody who I admire and appreciate so much because of how kind she was, where she not only validated my experience, but continued to share a dialogue with me over some time. And what we wound up doing was sharing our experiences with each other and validating each other's experiences and helping each other heal. And that was really, really powerful. And so I'm not going to name her because I don't know if she's comfortable with that, but I did tell her that I was going to talk about talking with her because I think that if it weren't for her, I don't know that my recovery and healing from that relationship would have gone the way that it did. By the end of that relationship, I was so broken. I had become a person that I didn't know. I had become a person that I didn't like. I had even not been the best mom I feel like that I could be, because I let this person, and I always describe it this way, is I let this person actually get his fingers in my brain. Like, it's so wild. And I say I let him because unfortunately that's what happens. It's not like I did anything wrong. I know that. It's just that that's how good they are at what they do. They have, and so what's important is that when he found out that I had reached out to his ex-girlfriend, she didn't tell him. I had said, hey, I reached out to her because, there's something weird going on here. And it got back to him. Then I was really crazy and out of line, and how dare I, and blah, blah, blah. But guess what? he was cheating on her with me at the beginning of the relationship, because what narcissists do is they always have their next supply lined up. So when you're like the narcissistic abuse situation is always like you're extremely valuable to them until you're not, until they have somebody else.
Usually once you start seeing through their bullshit, you depreciate in value.
Yeah. Yep. And so there comes a point where once they can't control you anymore, once they can't get into your head anymore, that's when they're like, oh shit, got to find somebody else. Mm-hmm. And, but they don't ever completely let you go until they've got somebody else. And so
I might still keep tabs.
Yes. Yeah. So for a little while, this person still continued to reach out to me. I had to block him everywhere, including email. And like Slack.
I don't even know how to block someone on email.
So yeah, I mean, it just goes to your fucking spam, but still like, yeah, that's how like desperate he was to reach me. That was something that took a lot of healing afterwards. And I think I'm still healing from that, because it wasn't all that long ago. Knowing that I didn't do anything wrong, knowing that this is someone that does this to people, because I was his third. So as a matter of fact, I wound up speaking to his previous ex, who, guess what? He claimed she was a narcissist. And so that's also a thing. So when somebody is talking a lot about their ex all the time and what a narcissist they are, chances are they're the one doing the abuse. Either not an actual narcissist, but like it's usually a narcissistic abuse situation where the person saying, oh, my ex was a narcissist. I mean, he had books, dude. He had books about it. Books about narcissistic abuse.
Really?
And it was like, oh my God, I cannot believe that this is actually happening. Like outside of it, now I'm like, of course. Again, textbook. If you look at what narcissistic abuse is, it is textbook what he did. Mm-hmm. And he did it to the first one, he did it to the second one, and he did it to me. I was the third. And so knowing that this is what this happens, knowing what the signs are, recognizing the patterns are really, really important to not just get yourself, like keep yourself from getting into these situations, but if you're in it, to get yourself out, but also to support other people who have been or are in those situations. A really quick shout out to my friend Jermaine, who actually said to me very early on, hey babe, something's going on here. And I was like, dude, you know, like that's not cool. I really wish that you would just support me in my relationship. And thankfully he was just like, all right, I got you. Like I'm here. He tried to tell me, he was like, he's grooming you. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, babe, I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it. And that's the thing about it, that it's really, really hard for other people to even articulate what they're seeing and feeling about the situation, but there's something wrong. And he stuck by me, my dear friend Jermaine, and was very supportive after the fact too. So shout out to him really quick, because he's the only person actually in my whole life who spoke up and said, hey, something's going on and I don't like it and I'm worried about you.
Yeah.
And but still stood by me and was my friend through the whole process. So that's really important too. It can feel really frustrating, I think, when you see somebody you love going through something and you can see it and they can't. Mm-hmm. But it is really important. You don't have to say, okay, yeah, I agree with this. You can say, I disagree with this, but I still love you and I'm still here for you.
Yeah. Like I'm team you.
Yeah.
Whatever the outcome.
Like you have been for me so many times already.
Yeah.
So there is one other type of domestic abuse, but I do think it is a whole big topic that Kristen and I agree should be kind of its own episode, and that is family abuse. So we are going to talk about that in another episode at another time. So I think in conclusion, I personally just want to say that the reason that I have shared my stories and been so candid about such heavy and personal stuff is because so many of us suffer in silence. I did every single time. Mm-hmm. And in this last relationship, I was so ashamed by the fact that I had allowed myself to get into this situation that I really beat myself up over it. And I was like, you know, I let this person meet my kids. I let this person take me out of my life and change my routine and all the things. And I really struggled with forgiving myself. And I'm very lucky that I have had the support that I have had. My ex-husband, Dan, even though he's my ex-husband, I know I've talked a lot about him. He was my rock, actually. He was the first person that I called after I got screamed at on the phone about calling this guy's ex-girlfriend and being told what a fucking psycho I was for doing that. Meanwhile, I had caught him in a lie. So, of course I was a psycho, right?
Yeah. But about him.
Right. He didn't do anything wrong. And that's gaslighting right there. Dan really, like, I called him and I was sobbing and I was like, am I really that bad? Am I really this? And like, I kind of unloaded, and he was the first person that I was honest with about it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I'm pretty sure that he like showed up and helped me with the kids and was just like, it's going to be okay. Like, this is fucked up and I didn't like that guy. And I know it wasn't my place to say anything, which is why I didn't say anything. And so there's a reason why somebody might not say something, right? He was my ex-husband, and how could he possibly say, I don't like this guy that you're dating?
Right. Without it looking weird for him.
Right. Yeah. But like, the fact that he was so supportive and like, no, you're amazing. You're a great mom and you're a great person. And you're, you know, like, to have somebody like that in my corner, and like, that might make me cry, but like, that's happy tears that I would cry.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky that I have such a supportive ex-partner and co-parent who has been there for me through so much. And so like, a little bit of kind of a happy ending is that like, okay, so my ex-husband, we just didn't work out for other reasons. He was not one of my abusers. I want to say that, make that very clear.
He said we're not naming abusers, and you just named him. So.
Yeah. So, and just the people that I have in my life, people who love you. And this is something that I'm also talking about in my ADHD episode, is that people who love you are going to be there for you no matter what, even when you fuck mm-hmm. up. And they're not going to be people that are hard on you for your mistakes.
Yeah, not doing the I told you so dance.
Yeah, nobody wants to be right about this stuff, like, especially the people who love you. They don't want to be right when they see this kind of stuff. And so just keep that in mind when there are people in your life, you know, when you come out of a situation, because I did come out of this situation with a lot of judgment. I came out of this situation, I'm still actually feel like suffering the consequences of judgment and criticism mm-hmm. from being in that relationship. And it's really painful, because I take accountability for being an adult who got into the situation, but like, this is a very specific type of abuse, and it is a very, very psychological torment type of abuse. Mm-hmm. And so many people are so vulnerable and they don't even realize it. So you are not alone. I think that that's really ultimately what it boils down to. If you feel like you have nobody else, you can always reach out to me. You can always reach out to Kristen. We can listen. We can provide resources.
Yes, I did note the National Domestic Abuse Hotline. Yeah. So it's 1-800-799-SAFE or 7233. And something else I wanted to just briefly touch on, because I feel like this could also be its own episode, is, you know, getting that clinical support is so important. Like, one of the most common things that I see with my clients is how scary and how difficult that I've personally lived too, how scary and how difficult it is to get into a healthy relationship after experiencing abuse. And
oh, yeah.
How hard it is to trust it and feel safe and comfortable in that dynamic, and stop waiting for either shoe to drop and stop waiting for like bracing yourself for this impact that doesn't come, which is how I describe my own experience of it, even in my current relationship. It happens constantly.
Yeah.
I'm several years removed now from the abusive experiences that I went through.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I will say that, I mean, thankfully we have each other, and it is really, really helpful to have somebody who gets it and to just kind of like have somebody to validate, like, nah, dude, you're not crazy. You're just traumatized, and and it's okay. And what you're experiencing and feeling is completely normal. Mm-hmm. And, like, having that has helped me to navigate my relationship in a more healthy way, and to be with a partner who is so loving and supportive and committed is actually completely terrifying. Mm-hmm. for someone who has been through what I've been through. So it is really hard, and I am very lucky that I have somebody who kind of understands that too, who and I feel like for both of us, we both have partners that are very kind and understanding about, like, it's okay. Like, you've had your shit. I'm still here. That doesn't scare me.
Yeah. And then one of us gets in our head, the other one can be like, yep, I know that color. This happens.
Exactly. Hey, so I'm having a trauma response.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, that happened to me too. It'll clear up within, like, you know, a couple.
Yeah, what do we prescribe for that? Like,
like, what I prescribe for it is talking about it, like communicating about it with your healthy partner, mm-hmm. with your friends who get you, who validate you, who support you, and kind of, you know, like, because once we shine a light on it, once we remove the self-stigma that survivors end up really putting on ourselves,
from
all of the invalidation, all of the gaslighting, all of the experiences we've had that have made us question ourselves and question our reality and second guess every single fucking thing we say and think and do.
Yeah.
Getting to a point of just having that emotional safe space to say it, and instead of being told you're crazy, like, oh yeah, no, you're absolutely not crazy. Me too. This is what mine looked like. This is what helped me.
And not only that, but the having a partner who is like, I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't scare me. Or that, you know, like those kinds of things too. Like, we're not always going to be our best selves in a relationship. Mm-hmm. We're just, I mean, that's just the reality of being a human being and the human existence, right? Like, we are going to fuck up. And having somebody who you don't have to worry about, oh my God, am I going to be in trouble for this? Am I going to have to, like, one thing that I struggle right now in my current relationship, I would say, is like the idea of forgiving myself after something doesn't go right.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, oh my God, like, did I fuck this up? Is he going to leave me? And not because he's ever made me feel that way, because he's always like, I'm not going anywhere.
Fuck, I just had an emotional reaction. What do they think?
Yeah, like,
like, I just had a feeling and I expressed it. I'm bad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so that's something that we kind of didn't really talk about too much. But you're always allowed to express how you feel in a relationship, and your feelings are always fucking valid. Don't ever let anybody tell you otherwise, because that has happened to me even in relationships that weren't like overtly abusive. It is abusive to invalidate somebody's feelings and experiences. It is an unhealthy practice to get into, to treat somebody like their feelings don't matter. Like, you can't tell somebody that what they felt and what they experienced isn't real, because it's their experience. And so there's a difference between, I intended this, and this is not how you received it. And like, okay, that doesn't mean that that person's reaction is any less valid.
Yeah. If they're saying you hurt them, you don't get to decide you didn't.
Right. Exactly. So I think that, that's it, right? Happy endings are possible.
Happy endings are possible. Healing is possible. It might be a long uphill climb, but it's not an insurmountable one.
And You don't need to. I don't think that I personally don't subscribe to the idea of like being fully healed. I just don't. I think that it's a constant ongoing process. Life is full of trauma, and so that's just kind of the way it is, right?
Well, at first I saw a psychologist explain it with a visual once with some paint.
Ooh.
And she painted a big, wish I could credit like any of these people that I'm referencing, but she paints a like black spot on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so this is your trauma. This is the experience. And then she starts painting circles of color around it. Like, this is you going on to have new experiences. The trauma doesn't go away. It's not something that we just get over and forget about,
mm-hmm.
but it becomes smaller. The impact lessens as we have these new experiences, as we build and grow around it.
I love that. I love that. That's a great way to describe it. Yeah. Cause like you can go into a relationship and still be very much in your healing, like newly healing phase. I mean, I am still, I would say I just got out of that narcissistic abusive relationship. I mean, I guess now it's been a little over, it's like been a year and a half about, but you know, I've only been with my current partner now since January. And so like, and I dated somebody else for a brief period in between there. So like,
mm-hmm.
I got almost no time. And yes, you can judge me for being a serial monogamist. That's fine. We can talk about that at another time. but healing is possible even in relationships. And a lot of times we don't realize what is even going to trigger us until we are in a relationship. And mm-hmm. having a partner is the most important part of that healing process.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kristen.